RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Thursday morning means money talks on RCR. Not too many money talks to go before we get to the end of the year. Joel Robinson, who is a Wellington-based financial advisor specialising in investment, running his own finance advice business, Radical Investment, is back with us. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
Good morning, Paul. I'm doing good, thank you. Very busy, tired, kind of ready for Christmas in some ways.
Yeah. Really busy is good.
Yeah, I mean, and good busy too. Sometimes, you know, there's a difference between good busy and bad busy, isn't there? But
Yeah. So good busy's being paid for it, mate.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously bringing success to your clients.
Yeah, well, it's been a fascinating year so far. Lots has gone on in markets in general across the board, not just Bitcoin. You know, gold's had a really great year. Equities has had a really good year. Except the New Zealand market hasn't had as good a year. It's easy when times are good and returns are good.
Did you hear our chat with Jeremy Corden, who's invented Goldback, which is a polymer note, using a very high-tech process to shave off from a lump of gold somewhere and infuse into the polymer note, which looks like cash and can fold in the wallet and has a very accurate amount of actual gold embedded in it as a note in different denominations, obviously US denominations, tracking the price of gold. But he seems to me, the reason I'm mentioning it, and you mentioned gold there, we've talked quite a bit about gold. This is the way of getting around the age-old conundrum of actually using it practically.
Potentially.
In a cash environment. Yeah, potentially.
The difficulty comes when it comes to international settlement and international transactions. I guess my view, and it's somewhat informed by the process I went through on the history of money, which is a plug for Reality Check Radio's great series there, which Paul and I did.
It's all on the replays, every episode.
Go find on the replays. I guess my view is I think that, the most likely outcome is that, Bitcoin's going to supersede all of it. It's going to be the superior because of the lower supply rate, the higher stock to flow ratio, harder form of money in terms of the creation rather than the tangibility.
So there could be a niche kind of money product.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? I could be completely wrong. Bitcoin could end up being undermined through some way, shape, or form, and people lose trust in it. That's certainly a possibility. I don't think anything is a guaranteed thing when it comes to money, and that's why diversification is so important. I'll always encourage clients to be diversified. Nothing changes that.
I remember, you just reminded me, ages ago there used to be a radio station called Radio Pacific, and I was on there for a while, and I was sitting there ready to do my talk back after the hour-long, this is on a Saturday, hour-long spot that someone had on investment advice. This is going back early 2000s, and it was when the finance companies collapsed, and a guy rang up, I've never forgotten this, and he said, "I've lost all my money." And the guy said, "How? A finance company." And the guy said, "Well, you know, you've got to diversify your investments." And he said, "Yeah, I put money in every finance company."
Yeah. And unfortunately, and really sadly, in many cases, that was what a lot of people did. And a lot of people thought they were diversified because they were across multiple finance companies. But, and actually, in many ways, we see this in New Zealand with people's approach to investment property. They have all of their wealth in an investment property or a huge chunk of it. They think that it's diversified because it's across different properties or even across different parts of New Zealand. But I routinely talk to a lot of people where all the wealth and property, it's all in one location. Yeah. Well, you talk to anyone that had a huge chunk and was highly leveraged and around the time of the Christchurch earthquake and what happened or how tough it was to continue to, service those loans because the bank still wants to be paid.
Yeah.
They go, okay, absolutely. Well, yeah, tough luck. There's so many people in New Zealand still that I think don't actually understand diversification. But anyway.
Yeah. It's going back a bit.
I love going off topic.
I haven't forgotten that because I feel sorry for the dude, but it made me chuckle.
Totally.
All right. Now, we've talked about MicroStrategy before, but remind us quickly again, very quick, on what and who and whatever is MicroStrategy.
Yeah, so MicroStrategy is a company listed on the US stock market. It's actually existed a long, long time. They are, or were, kind of still are, a software business that provides some, you know, software as a service solutions. That used to be what most people bought or you know, invested in that business for. They went through a huge rise and fall with the whole dot-com bubble and took a long time to recover. And what happened is about 3-4 years ago, the co-founder and executive chairman, Michael Saylor, Saylor with a Y, decided that they would adopt a Bitcoin standard or a Bitcoin treasury approach, where as a business, they would virtually do nothing else with the cash that they are, I guess, making from their software business, but buy Bitcoin and hold it on the balance sheet. And they've kind of done nothing much other than that since then. Now, for a time, their business was still being bought because of it being a software business. But now the value of what they hold as a company in Bitcoin has far, far dwarfed the actual value of the original business. And they've kind of pivoted to calling themselves a Bitcoin treasury company, which ironically has the initials BTC, which is what Bitcoin is basically known as for short.
Okay.
Nice play on words from them. And so basically how it's so interlinked with Bitcoin is what they've done is they've used the structures that are available within capital markets in the US to raise money solely for the purpose of buying more Bitcoin. So the way that they do that, and for people that invest in the share market, they'll be familiar with this, but basically, it's pretty common a company will do a capital raise at some point during their life. Usually, it's to like buy something. So, you know, in my previous work, I was previously at Forsyth Barr. We had involvement when, for example, Arvida did a capital raise to buy a private retirement village. That was that sort of thing was a pretty good example of a capital raise, raising money to do something with the money that should be for the benefit of shareholders. And so, what MicroStrategy has instead done has been doing that solely, pretty much, for the purpose of buying Bitcoin. And then alongside that, they've been issuing debt to buy Bitcoin through very intelligent means.
When you say very intelligent, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so the bond market as a whole is a huge part of world share markets or world securities markets. They're not shares, bonds, they're a form of security. So they actually really dwarf the share markets. You know, the world debt market is huge. It's a huge part of portfolios, huge part of KiwiSaver, you know, huge part of foreign similar versions of KiwiSaver. So it's really, really relevant area. Now, you have a lot of funds out there where based on what they invest into, what they set out they invest into, they can only invest into bonds. Can't do anything else. Don't buy shares, what have you. Then you've got other funds that need to have, you know, in their portfolio or in their fund a certain percentage that's in bonds. You have a variety of different things. But needless to say, there are a lot of funds out there that need to hold this stuff or want to hold this stuff. And what they do is very clever. So they say, all right, we're going to raise X amount of money. We will pay you basically a nominal low percentage, sometimes even 0%, which to, you know, to someone that's used to like a term deposit, put it in the bank, okay, maybe 4-5% at the moment. If you're doing that and getting zero, you'd think, what a waste of time. Why would I do that? Well, the reason they're doing that is because once the share price gets to a certain level, MicroStrategy can basically pay the bondholder out essentially value equivalent to whatever that share price is. And that could be in the form of shares, it could be in the form of cash, and often that fund will then, if it's in shares, sell the shares, and they've made a capital gain there. And on the flip side, if in 5 or 6 years' time, which is often how long these bonds are structured for, so the money's put away, 5-6 years, they're going to get it back, like kind of like a long-term deposit for sake of simplicity. And so provided MicroStrategy is still sound, still solvent as a business, in 5 or 6 years, they're getting that money back. So, and for as long as the company remains solvent, it's a supposedly low risk or risk-free, you know, bond investment for them. So they're getting potentially equity-like returns with having some level of downside certainty that they're not going to get back less than they put in, provided MicroStrategy still exists.
Yeah.
And because what MicroStrategy has been doing, using that cash to buy more Bitcoin, that in turn has really actually been a significant factor in the rise of the price of Bitcoin for the last.
Oh, so they're making their own weather. They make their own weather.
They have been doing that effectively, yes. And it's been kind of self-perpetuating. So they've been buying Bitcoin. That's been pushing the price up because they've been buying huge volume.
Hmm.
But between 18th and 24th of November, they bought about $5.4 billion worth of Bitcoin.
That's just a few days.
Yep. Less than a week.
Wow.
Or $5.4 billion, which is a huge, huge chunk.
Hmm.
That in turn, because they're then announcing to shareholders, oh, we now have more Bitcoin as a company. Shareholders who are buying MicroStrategy because they want exposure to Bitcoin through a company, with inverted commas, is giving them
more certainty.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's a way to access investment into Bitcoin through the more traditional owning shares, which, again, back to some funds needing to own shares and not being able to own Bitcoin directly. It's like a proxy that they can buy.
Oh, I see. Yep.
And so, you know, MicroStrategy announces, okay, we bought all this Bitcoin. The, you know, that's then excited investors because there's more there that they're effectively investing into, which means more money has been flowing. And it's been a bit of a self-perpetuating thing until it was about, I don't know, a week ago, it reached a peak and gone through about almost 200% return in the space of 3 months. I mean, a huge, huge rise for for an already very large company. And that's been one big factor among many for why Bitcoin price has risen so much since we actually finished recording that What Is Money series. It almost hit $100,000. It was, I think, about 50,000 or 60,000 when we started recording.
Yeah.
So, it's been a fascinating last few months. And so they've kind of just been able to perpetually, you know, price
perpetual
goes up.
Motion engine.
A little bit.
At this point.
But,
anyway.
I mean, at some point that will change because I think other companies will adopt a similar approach.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that's proprietary or overly unique.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's arguably unique because no one else is doing it.
Yeah.
But there's nothing stopping.
Well, being
other
the original
from doing
is,
the same thing.
Is an advantage, you know, but you've got to maintain it.
Yeah. Well, the thing it comes back to is for someone that's buying this, the reason you'd buy it is because the share that you own in that company is growing in terms of how much Bitcoin each share. Yeah.
So the share price tracks it.
Yeah. I mean, the share price is certainly influenced by what's going on with the price in Bitcoin. But for anyone buying that company, you'd only be doing so if the share that you have in the business is going to be worth more in terms of Bitcoin. Otherwise, you'd just own Bitcoin directly.
Yep.
And so over time, as more companies, I think, will start to adopt this approach, it's going to be less novel. And so the kind of premium that they're able to command for their shares will contract back. So it's not like a, you know, this isn't going to keep going on forever.
Mm. In fact, well, Bitcoin won't go on forever.
Peak, but,
yeah, because it's capped, right?
Well, yeah, the Bitcoin supply is capped. The price isn't capped. The price is dependent on.
So every Bitcoin that exists, then they could force it even higher.
Could do.
What I'm thinking, though, is to buy the Bitcoin, they're going to use fiat currency to buy it, do they?
Correct. Yes, they're raising capital in US dollars, pumping those, basically selling those US dollars to whoever's selling them the Bitcoin, which could be individuals. I mean, I've seen lots of posts online about people saying, you know, the price of Bitcoin's reached a point where now I'm debt-free.
Yeah.
And so I've, you know, I still believe that, and this is often what has been said, I still believe Bitcoin's going to go higher, but at this point, you know, I basically kind of set myself up and my family up. How can I say no? And so that's very understandable. And there's a lot of people that have been doing that.
So the idea is to get as much in as possible before there's any, I don't know, lack of demand for the fiat currency. Because if that devalues or confidence is lost there, who's going to exchange Bitcoin for dollars?
Well, you're exactly right. That's the argument that a lot of Bitcoin maxis, as they're called, Bitcoin maximalists, people who have basically as much as possible invested in Bitcoin. Hmm. That's kind of the argument being made. I don't know if it's quite as simple as that, but that's certainly a big factor as to why the price has been moving like it has. But what we're seeing at the same time now is, and it's no surprise to me, I expected it was going to start as soon as Trump was elected, or soon after, is that other companies are following in MicroStrategy's footsteps. So
yeah,
there's a lot of pretty small, pretty unknown companies because, frankly, they don't have too much to lose. And by getting more spotlight from, you know, adopting kind of whatever the current thing is you know, generally a favorable move for them to increase their, I don't know, their market share, increase the value of the stock for those involved with the business. But there are some, you know, more significant companies that are a little bit more known that are involved. And one that might be a bit more known to RCR listeners is Rumble, the, you know, competitor to YouTube. Just recently, it was only a couple of days ago, announced that they are starting to adopt a Bitcoin treasury. And they've targeted, can't remember if they've bought it yet, but they were going to target buying 30 million US worth to start with, which is obviously a drop in the bucket compared to MicroStrategy buying 5.4 billion.
Well, they've got 1.6% of all Bitcoins, haven't they, MicroStrategy?
Yeah, round about that figure. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, they are a whale, basically, in the Bitcoin space.
Imagine if you could say, yeah, I've got 1.6% of the US currency.
Yeah. Be very wealthy. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Doing all right. Sorry, I broke your stride.
No, that's all right.
Where were you at?
Yeah, it's a very valid thought. Yeah, so there are more and more companies, you know, starting to adopt a Bitcoin standard, and I think we're going to see more and more over the coming months. And partly that's because Trump has really campaigned on that. Well, not solely on that, obviously, but one of many things, and has surrounded himself with a lot of Bitcoiners, a lot of Bitcoin believers, and those involved with cryptocurrency in general. And there is a bill which I know has been alluded to previously on RCR, which is a senator, a Republican senator named Cynthia Lummis, who has proposed a bill to buy 200,000 Bitcoin a year for 5 years to form part of the US strategic Bitcoin reserve that Trump has talked about doing.
Copying Ecuador.
El Salvador. Yes.
No, I keep getting that wrong. El Salvador.
They're very close by. Yeah, Ecuador might do it. Maybe you just.
I think that's what you said last time. I got it wrong. Okay. But yeah, maybe, that's what they're doing, right?
Maybe you're just looking to the future, Paul. You're telling Ecuador they're doing it before they even know it.
Yeah. Well, maybe I should act on that. That'd be crazy. Yeah. So
strategic advisor.
We'll see more of this sort of talk, like the US senator is advocating here. In fact, we should be talking about that here, I reckon.
Well. Yeah, I mean, there's no interest in it here. There's obviously, you know, focus on a lot of other things in New Zealand at the moment, which is outside the Money Talks remit, so we won't go there.
But,
it would be good to see some discourse on that. And frankly,
well, I think it's a mainstream conversation to have now.
Yeah, it's becoming much more and more mainstream. Certainly, you know, it's becoming more mainstream in the US, and I think I'd be very surprised if it's not a factor for voting in New Zealand in the next election cycle. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a party that comes out that is just solely about Bitcoin, like a one policy kind of party.
Boy, that'd be interesting to see if that works or captures any market share.
Yeah, would be. Yeah. But I think some political parties might adopt it and run with it anyway, which would take some of that market share. But anyway, I digress on that. It's certainly just a fascinating, continually developing part of what's relevant in the world of money in today. But,
and you look at what's moving, where it's going, who's moving it, and you get an idea of the picture.
Yeah.
I've got here regular flow of funds into the US Bitcoin ETFs, more than 40 million per day.
Yeah. So they were first introduced in Jan this year, and since then, obviously, day to day, it changes quite a bit. Some days there's net outflows, some days there's net inflows. But if you were to take, as I did, pulled all the data, being very analytical, and looked, it was about a month ago, and the average would be higher since then, based on what's been going on. But if you were to look at the rolling 100-day, get a nice sort of three-month-ish time frame, there's not been a single 100-day time frame where the average amount being net bought or net inflow into these Bitcoin ETFs has fallen below 40 million,
Yeah,
has been
per
above
day.
that on average. So yeah, that's also a significant driver alongside companies adopting, governments still buying, El Salvador still doing their one Bitcoin a day at least. You've got other countries mining it. I suspect that some of the mining going on in China and Russia is Bitcoin that's ultimately being held by government and not individuals.
We could see why they might want to do that.
And you've got what's kind of playing out is this game theory, I guess, where governments like all the BRICS countries talking about developing their own currency and de-dollarizing and possibly it being 50% gold backed. And what they're trying to do is regain some sovereignty in a way, not being as beholden to the US. And they're trying to do so by having what might be a desirable, harder currency. And if they were to do that, I think all it would do is just tip the US into just full on Bitcoin mode. And I think what you'd end up seeing is those other countries almost being forced to follow. It's like none of them really want to just outright do that, because it would probably, ultimately mean the death of their own currency and the death of their ability to have, control over money supply. But were they to not have some, they then also economically potentially just end up being far inferior to their main
On an
rivals.
island somewhere.
And so you're getting this kind of this game theory playing out of them not really wanting to do it because it means probably giving up a lot of
But being
control.
forced at the same time as well.
Yeah, but not wanting to miss
What do
out
I
because
do?
they
What do I
worry about
do?
the impact of it. So as acceleration adopts, it kind of forces other major players to adopt as well. And I just really think we're in the early stages of that. And I think we're going to see more of that, especially once Trump gets in a couple of months' time and has some ability to enact and make some policy. It's going to be a fascinating 2025.
There hasn't been two, unless I missed it, and you'll tell me, and let's end up on this, very specific policies on the monetary side, economic side. I mean, there's inflation to deal with. He keeps on saying energy's going to come down, all those things. He always says those things. Have you seen anything that sort of points to where their policies might take them?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of deregulation that's coming. That's what's continually being talked about. Long term, that obviously has some implications. It's this constant battle of overregulation versus not enough, and it's just this continuous ebb and flow that you tend to get. So I don't think there's anything that surprising there. The expectations of cutting tax rates for corporates and the like, not surprising. That's obviously going to be nice for anyone invested in US shares because that means more profit to the shareholder ultimately. And a lot of these things are probably going to drive inflation, and that's why we're starting to see bond rates, which bonds tend to be quite a good proxy for inflation expectations. I won't go into why. That's probably a whole episode in itself. But basically, the bond yields that we're seeing in the US have risen a bit, so the expectation on how fast and how much they'll cut interest rates has come back, and that's all as a result of expectations of what Trump's going to do when in office, which is things that are generally expected to be a bit more inflationary. But I guess the flip side to that is you're probably somewhat well positioned if you're holding some Bitcoin or some gold. They're two assets that tend to do pretty well in inflationary environments.
Joel, I'm sure we'll catch up before the end of the year, even if it's for a quick chat. But thanks for coming on Money Talks again. Really
Thanks,
interesting.
Paul.
Boy,
Yeah.
it really is. Because I know, in our chats, I've been educated by you, but I've seen the progression in a quite a short period of time. It's been
Yeah.
remarkable, really quick.
Yeah. But, and for anyone, wanting to kind of dive into this topic a bit, would highly recommend just going and Googling some talks that Michael Saylor has done, the executive chairman of MicroStrategy. He really, he's done thousands of hours of diving into this and can put it much more eloquently than myself. But yeah, and also if you're wanting to have a conversation with it, feel free to get in touch. I do have some clients that have been obviously holding a bit in KiwiSaver as one part of a portfolio. But yeah, it's just fascinating world right now, and in many ways.
And they can go to your website, best place, eh? Do you want to give us the address just quickly?
Yeah, it's radicalinvestment.co.nz. Nice and simple.
All right. Joel, we'll talk again before we're done at the end of the year. Thanks for coming back on today, though.
No worries. Thanks, Paul. Always great.
The RCR Shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR Shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.